The great provocateur Michael Moore has a new film out that involves roaming the world in a bid to find solutions to America's problems. Our film critics will review it today. We'll also take a look at the Coen brothers' latest, a film that's described as one of the most devastating depictions of the Holocaust ever recorded. And all those Oscar-nominated shorts, they come in different categories, animated, live action, and documentary, and I tend to love them all. Our critics once again today are film professor Cindy Haynes. Cindy, nice to have you.
Thank you very much, Steve.
KCUR, Steve Walker's here. Steven.
I am here, thanks.
Bob Butler reviews films for the Kansas City Star. Follow his reviews, as I do, at butlercinemascene.com. Robert, how are
you? Good morning.
Well, let's start with Son of Saul. This is one of the most devastating and disturbing depictions of the Holocaust ever recorded on film. Steve Walker, tell us about it.
Well, and we'll say it's disturbing because it's probably the least
specific.
Specific. Yeah, thank you, Bob. Which we'll talk about. In the death camps, there were Jewish workers called Sonderkommandos, separated from the SS Sonderkommandos. Am I saying that correctly? Meaning that the Jewish prisoners who worked, their job was to herd, there's no other word for it, people from the trains to the gas chambers. And they did it to stay alive. There's, I don't think, any question many people would take them up on that offer. What's so difficult about the film, which is really powerful, is that you don't see the kind of atrocities and images that we are have seen in documentary after documentary and Schindler's List. But the camera is so tight on this one man's face, either full forward, we're looking at him right in the eyes, or from right from the behind his head. So all of the images that you have seen are like in shadow, in blurry, off to the sides of his head.
Out of focus,
in the background, out of focus.
Making it very claustrophobic.
Very, very, very. And so you're watching this process of the killing machine completely from his eyes.
You know what's interesting about this for me is that imagine yourself in that position. How would you survive? You do it by looking straight ahead, by trying not to focus on the details, by just getting the job done. And that's the visual representation they give you in this movie.
Right.
You don't see that pile of bodies. You see a vague outline of what looks like a pile of bodies. You don't see the dogs and the guards, but you see them shadowy figures on the, off to the side. It's the only way this guy survives is by looking straight ahead.
There are two other things going on here, too. There is an attempt at an escape, and I think it was the only recorded attempt by people who were in the concentration camps to organize a breakout.
Jailbreak, yeah.
And also the story of a dead young boy. And correct me if I'm wrong about this, but the boy has died. We don't know whether it's really his son, whether he wishes it was his son, or what's really going on there. But he's looking for a rabbi. He's got the young boy in his arms to say Kaddish over him, because to him that would be a horrible sin that this young boy.
I think the reason this boy means so much to him, it's not a question of blood. This boy survives the gas chamber and then is strangled by a German guard. The rarity of somebody coming through that experience still breathing means this kid is special. And our nominal hero, Saul, declares this boy his son, and he's going to make sure he's buried according to the proper rituals.
The other thing that's so difficult to take in is the sounds. The sound
brilliant sound design
of this film is you hear people shuffling and the breathing and the quickly taking the clothes off at the demand of the guards and the knockings on the doors when they have been shut and the gas is released. It's just
chilling.
Amazing.
It was directed by Laszlo Namish. This is his first feature film, which is absolutely incredible to realize. He did accept the Golden Globe for Best Foreign Language Film, and he said at the time that he wanted to put a face to the Holocaust, that that's what made his film a bit different. There's a wonderful interview with the director and the star that Terry Gross did several weeks ago. And at the end, both men felt that what stays with them is this horror, but the frustration that the naked, shameless cruelty that was manifested during the Holocaust is still among us.
Mm-hmm.
Cambodia, Darfur, Rwanda, Bosnia, and never
Syria.
Again. It's continuing this genocide, and mm-hmm. so, you know,
you've got to be prepared.
Yeah, well, I was going to say one of the big questions that's in my mind here is, you know, seeing another film about the Holocaust. That's a tough thing to do here, right?
But the ones that will last are the ones that have just a different angle on it, and this one certainly does.
Boy, yeah.
Because you go in thinking, okay, I'm going to watch another film about Auschwitz or what, not dismissively, give me something new to take in.
Yeah.
It has been nominated for Best Foreign Film. I would maybe put money on it.
Oh, I think it probably got the best shot.
I happened to look at The Look of Silence, which is an Oscar-nominated documentary about the genocide in Indonesia.
Another terrific movie.
Mm-hmm. Another terrific film.
Okay. That film, again, is titled Son of Saul, playing at the Tivoli and the Glenwood Arts, right?
Yes.
Okay. Let's move on to another one. Where Do We Invade Next? This is Michael Moore's latest subversive documentary, his first in 6 years, by the way. He roams the world seeking solutions to America's problems, Bob.
I love this movie. I got to tell you, not only was I amused, I was moved by it in ways I did not anticipate. Mm. Let's face it, Michael Moore can be pretty snarky. A lot of people just hate him flat out. There's no question about it.
Count me among them.
Yep.
You always have, Cynthia. Even before I knew you, I'd listen to Kraske's show.
This film so insidious, so subversive, is that the approach is wholly upbeat and pro-American. He says, taking a page from the right-wing playbook, he says, I'm going to invade some countries and take whatever I want. So he gets on a plane carrying, I guess, this gigantic American flag on a pole, goes to various countries to appropriate ideas that'll make America a better place. Now, how can you argue with that, right? What's un-American about that? So he goes to Norway for the prison system where four guards handle 114 prisoners, and it looks more like a summer camp, and people actually come out better than when they went in. He goes to Germany, where every corporate board, half the seats, have to be held by workers in the company. He goes to Iceland, where the only bank that didn't collapse in 2008 was run by women because, the women say, women don't buy into something they don't understand. They're not into macho risk-taking. It goes on and on.
Yeah.
Italian couple who are thinking of coming to the United States until they learn that there is no mandatory vacation or maternity leave. And then they look at each other like, what backwater did you hail from, mister?
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe my favorite. He goes to France and has lunch at an elementary school. Lunch is an entire class. It takes an hour. You learn to eat in a civilized manner and appreciate good food. There is not a French fry in sight. And when Michael Moore produces a can of Coke from his pocket and offers to share it with the kids, they look at him like he's a drug peddler. There is some marvelous stuff in this movie. Ultimately, it's an indictment of America's jingoism, of America's machismo, and of America's exceptionalism, the idea that we're so great we can't learn anything from anybody. Well, if that's so, how come we're so PO'd in this election year?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's always his version of the story.
Well, of course.
There's never another point of view. There's never another perspective.
And that's a problem, you're saying.
Well, and for me, this movie was a series of outtakes from Roger and Me, Bowling for Columbine, and especially Capitalism, a Love Story. And I thought, what's new, Michael?
Right. I'm with Bob. I thought it was funny, laugh out loud funny at times, and made the point that in 2016, if you look at math scores or science success and those kinds of things, America, who used to be one and proud of it, has fallen in rankings about things that ultimately matter. Education and
healthcare.
Health. And he does it in a way that is tongue-in-cheek and funny, but makes it
so point. Look at these countries. Italy, healthcare issues, Finland, education, France, Germany. What's the size of these countries? And what's the population versus the United States? I mean, that's never addressed. And of course there's disparity between how things are done in Germany and France and the way they're done in the United States.
Does Cindy have a point, Bob?
She does, but for me, the ultimate thing is it's about American attitude. American attitude is we don't have to learn anything from anybody, mm-hmm. and that's going to be the end of us.
That's the point that he's making.
For me.
But I don't think it was that obvious, Bob. If that was the point...
Because the whole purpose of this film is not to, you know, trash the United States. It's to offer these alternatives and make us in our minds look mm-hmm. at it and go, well, why the hell wouldn't that work?
But
here?
It could be perceived as trashing America if...
To point out that other countries have good systems?
If you have a certain sensibility, why are you trumpeting these foreign countries? I'm sorry, but...
Wait, excuse me. You don't want 4 weeks of vacation every year?
I'm being facetious, Bob. You know that.
Well, we're in the pantheon of documentary filmmakers. And again, quotes around the word documentary when it's... Okay, when we're talking about Michael Moore, I get that, Cindy. How is he regarded? How does Hollywood, how does the industry regard Michael Moore? Is he as controversial there?
I don't think very well. I mean, he's just repeating himself. He doesn't have anything new to say.
And yet, to my knowledge, his movies have made more money than those of any other documentary right. filmmaker.
Well, yeah, we're talking, what, $2-3 million?
Well, it means
range?
People see them.
Mm-hmm. Stephen?
I remember watching Fahrenheit 9/11 and Bowling for Columbine and being incredibly moved.
Really good films.
By what he had said. Yeah. They hit you right here. The opening 5 minutes, I think, of Fahrenheit 9/11 is... a black screen and the sound.
And they're very smart films.
I wish he had not taken this long because I like every movie he's made.
Maybe he's looking for new ideas. That's why he's taking so
well,
long to
according
go and see
to
what Cindy's
Cindy,
saying.
Yeah.
He's desperate.
Yeah.
Well, that new film from Michael Moore, Where Do We Invade Next? That's the new one. It's at the Alamo Drafthouse and the Glenwood Arts. And again, Michael Moore's Where Do We Invade Next? Okay, a category of film that I always get a big charge out of every year, the Oscar shorts. There's live action, the animated films, and the documentary films. One of the most popular aspects of the Academy Awards year after year. What do you want to say about the shorts, Cindy?
Well, for a lot of people, that's the highlight of the Academy Awards season is getting to see these shorts.
Yeah.
They're generally very good across the board.
I always get a kick out of them, yeah.
Talk about diversity. 30% of these nominated short films are by female filmmakers and from more than a dozen countries. Hmm. And that says a lot. I mean, you get these very interesting perspectives on a variety of subjects done by some very talented filmmakers. I encourage every aspiring filmmaker to go see these short films. What can be said in 5 minutes and 10 minutes and 16 minutes can be very profound.
And what's
and
amazing
very
to me is the images from many of these films stick with me year after year, yeah. even more profoundly than feature length films.
Well, you know,
do,
it's the difference between a novel and a short story.
That's right.
Sometimes
sure.
you can yes. do in a short story, right. you can set an atmosphere and nail it so perfectly. Mm-hmm. And that's what these films do.
Well, let's start with the animated category, Cindy, and a film, World of Tomorrow.
Yes, it's a little girl tours the future with her clone, and it's a meditation on technology and loneliness. It's 16 minutes long. I think we have a clip from it. It is this young girl being spoken to by her clone.
Okay.
I had lunch today.
I am a third generation Emily, contacting you from 227 years into your future. And I would like you to know that everything is going well in the transfer and cloning process, with very few signs of mental deterioration.
That grandma?
No, Emily, I am not your grandmother. In a sense, you are mine. I am Emily.
Emily.
That's one of the animated films, World of Tomorrow. How about Sanjay's?
Sanjay's Super Team. It's about an Indian-American family and the Hindu gods. and a little boy who's obsessed with cartoons and superheroes. It was made by one of the animators who works for Pixar, Sanjay Patel. Some people speculate that they probably spent more money on this Pixar short than they did for all the other short film nominated short films.
Wow.
And I think it's showing before some of the Pixar feature films.
Great.
Bear's Story is my favorite, and I have a feeling it might possibly win. It's from Chile. It's only 5 minutes long, and it's this melancholy diorama that a bear pushes through a town and lets people look at the way caged animals are treated by their oppressors. And the basis for this film is the filmmaker's grandfather, who was incarcerated by the Pinochet regime. And it's about oppression and very, very well done. I thought it was stop motion animation. And in fact, it's a digitally created film.
How about Prologue, a short British film here?
Yes, it's only 5 minutes long, and it's an anti-war story. It was using line drawings, and it involves the Spartan and their warriors who are battling. And it was done by an 82-year-old filmmaker, Richard Williams, who's won two Oscars, and he was the animation director on Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
And finally, there's a film in this animated short category, We Can't Live Without Cosmos.
Yes, and it was done by one of Russia's top animators. It's about cosmonauts in training, about these two young two cosmonauts who grew up together and what happens to them during this mission. There's absolutely no dialogue, very well-told story.
Steve Walker, let's dive into the Oscar-nominated documentary shorts here.
Well, I'll start with the three that will be seen on HBO soon. Body Team 12 is about people who treat Ebola patients in Liberia.
Mm.
A Girl in the River is about the honor killing of or the attempted honor killing of a young woman in Pakistan who's thrown in a river by her brother and father for marrying someone they didn't want her to marry. There's a portrait of Claude Lanzmann, who directed Shoah, the classic masterpiece 10-hour film about the Holocaust, and about his process to get that film made. It's fascinating. It's about a half hour. There's a film called Chow, Beyond the Lines, which is set in a hospital for child victims of Agent Orange. Very profoundly disabled kids. And it follows one young man who leaves the hospital at 17. He's an artist who ends up painting with his teeth, with the brush in his teeth, and he ends up working for an interior design firm who puts art in hotels. I loved it. It's so inspiring. And then the one we have a short clip from is Last Day of Freedom, which is actually, in my opinion, the best animated film, better than any of the five Cynthia was just talking about. They left me kind of cold this year. But this one's about a man whose brother came back from Vietnam with PTSD, kills a woman in a robbery, and then Bill, the brother, has to go through the agonizing decision to turn his brother in.
And this is an animated
film. It's animated.
Then why is it in this category?
It's a documentary, but the filmmaker who made it chose to use animation.
He had no footage of what
happened.
Yeah,
and it's incredible animation.
And
as
the clip here we have is what?
The clip is him talking about that decision that he had to make.
This is from Last Day of Freedom.
It hit me right then. I went over to where my wife was asleep. I got down at the foot of the bed beside her, and I was praying. I was trying to pray myself out of this nightmare that before I woke my wife, and it wasn't to be. And I woke her. I says, "We got to pray about this." And then I says, "Manny's done something. Where's Manny? Manny's done something terrible." So we talked about it. We agonized over what we're going to do about it. I was so scared. Now at this point, I'm scared. What's Manny going to do? Come home and hurt me now, and hurt my wife and the kids? That's when we decided, well, we got to do the right thing. We got to call the police.
Okay, that's Last Day of Freedom from the Oscar-nominated documentary short film there, and that's one film and a whole batch of them. How long do these films have to be to qualify for shorts?
I'm not sure. Body Team 12 is about 9 minutes.
I think if it's over 50, it becomes a feature.
Yeah, Claude Lanzmann is the longest one. But gosh, you're talking about Shoah. How are you going to do that in any less than 35 or 40 minutes?
But as a group, these documentary shorts, you give them...
I liked them all. I liked them a lot. And I like the live action shorts that I usually don't care for that Bob's going to talk about.
Anybody else seen the documentary shorts yet?
Just three of them.
Okay.
Three of them? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, here's the live-action shorts. I've also seen this group of films. Bob Butler, tell us about them.
Well, you run from comedy, although comedy that's barbed, to some pretty serious stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's start with some serious stuff. Everything Will Be Okay is about a German dad who picks up his daughter, he's a divorced man, for a weekend, and it becomes clear to everyone who's watching, although not immediately to the daughter, that he's planning to take her out of the country, that this is a kidnapping. Done in kind of a semi-documentary form, and it's really disturbing.
Oh, it's hard.
It is
to watch.
Hard.
Yeah, just painful.
A little bit more, how should we call it, upbeat and sort of, you know, conventionally melodramatic is Stutterer.
Which I love.
I loved it too, Steve.
Yeah.
Which is about a young man who is so incapacitated by his stuttering that some people think he's mentally challenged. He's learning sign language. In the meantime, he's been conversing on the internet, because he lets his fingers do the talking, with a young woman from another city. She announces she's coming to London and she'd like to meet him, and he is totally
petrified
at this possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Shock is set in the Bosnian War about 20 years ago. It's about two boys, maybe 12 or 13, their friendship against a background of ethnic cleansing. Pretty scary stuff.
It's tough.
Powerful.
The funniest thing here is called Ave Maria. It's an Israeli film about a Jewish family who are stranded by car trouble on the eve of the Sabbath outside a Roman Catholic nunnery. They take refuge in the nunnery where the nuns are prohibited from speaking. The husband wants to get help, but because it's a Sabbath, he can't use the telephone. The nuns finally silently agree to fix an old car that they have so that they can go. But the problem is that they were traveling through the West Bank, and this car looks like an Arab car. So the father is terrified that he's going to pull up to his West Bank settlement, and one of his neighbors is going to fill the car full of bullets. Because the way the nuns find to solve this issue is really quite funny.
This one didn't work for me, by the way.
Well, you know,
it's the first one out of the gate, and I was a little disappointed.
It worked for me because, in a way, it used comedy to take on a whole bunch of things that are of real importance to Israelis.
Yeah.
West Bank, right-wing settlers, prejudices against Arabs.
Right.
There's all sorts of things going around in here.
We have a clip from one other one here, Bob.
Yeah,
Day One.
This is the one I think is going to be winning the Oscar. Day One is made by a former U.S. military man, Henry Hiles, and is based on his experiences with a woman interpreter in Afghanistan, an Afghan woman. In this incredibly well-made short, this woman, on her first day working with the Americans, goes on a mission to find a bomb maker. They find the man, or who they think is the man, but the arrest is complicated by the fact that his wife goes into labor. None of the men are allowed to touch her. It falls to this woman, an Afghan woman, to be the midwife, although even though she has no idea what she's doing.
Yeah.
It is scary. It is tragic. It just... tension out the wazoo. I mean, it really worked for me.
And the clip here we have.
The clip here for me is this Afghan interpreter talking to the young American officer who's in charge of this mission.
This is from Day One.
Day 12 of supply run. No major finds. Well, one can of tomato soup. At least, I think it was tomato. God, I don't remember what tomatoes taste like. We'll begin returning to base camp.
I'm not sure that's the right clip.
I don't think it is.
I never heard that in the movie.
Did
you? I don't think so. Yeah, we'll try and figure out what happened to the clip for Day One.
Well,
but as a grouping of films,
I found that they were really quite effective, very entertaining, and they touching.
Yes, they do.
Shorts HD and Magnolia Pictures have gotten together to distribute these short films in movie theaters around the United States, and I'd really encourage people to see them in theaters. Liberty Hall, Tivoli, and the AMC Berrywoods are all showing some of the Oscar-nominated shorts.
Our stellar producer, Beth Lipoff, today has done some research and finds that the Academy defines feature-length films as those over 40 minutes.
Wow.
So there's
you can have a 45-minute feature film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess you can. Okay. All right. So again, a terrific group of live-action films. Lots of high praise here for the Oscar-nominated shorts and all the different categories here from our critics. Again, if you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. We'll return to some more standard feature-length films here. And this is the one that's gotten some buzz, Charlotte Rampling's performance being very highly praised. The film is titled 45 Years. It's a portrait of a long marriage that might unravel following the discovery of a dead girlfriend, Steve Walker.
Well, that's exactly it. It's Tom Courtney and Charlotte Rampling, who has got an Oscar nomination for Best Actress at 69, her first.
Her first one.
Yeah. Yes, they're about to, they're on the cusp of their 45th anniversary, and he gets a letter that explains that an old girlfriend of his, who was lost in a expedition that they took together, she's been encased in ice for many years, 40, 50 years probably?
Yeah, at least.
And they hear about it, and she is like, who is she? Who is this woman? I've never heard you mention her at all. And it opens a plethora of do I really know this person I've just spent 45 years of my life with? It's light. It's not real heavy, but it's not funny.
I assumed it was heavy just from the previews.
No.
It's carefully nuanced. That's what I like about it, because you could go overboard with this. Good movies are what you see on the surface, and then there good movies are also what's working underneath. And this, there are ideas about male and female relationships. Men keep their secrets. Women like to open up. Mm-hmm. Also, she is a former teacher. I mean, that's, you have to open up if you're a teacher. He was a businessman. Mm-hmm. You keep your secrets when you're a businessman.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of stuff running through this.
Oh, it's so nice to see the two of them on the screen, though, too.
Right. I mean,
they were very popular during the 60s, and
I wasn't aware of that.
And she's one of those actresses that is aging gracefully.
I love her. I always have loved her.
There's a wonderful moment where she sneaks into the attic and gets out a box of slides. Remember when your dad used to bore the visitors with a slideshow?
Yeah,
she's doing an investigation of who this
slides
woman
from the
was.
Vacation, and she for the first time she sees this woman, and she gets a bit more than she bargained for in this from this slideshow. And the look on her face, it's just astonishing. Not a word is spoken in this scene, but it'll blow you away.
Yeah, her performance is one of quiet fury in a way, and uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't have a lot to say, but the way she expresses her feelings got her this nomination.
There are several films out there recently that deal with that very issue, the aging couple and their relationship at the end of their lives. Amour was one of them.
Oh,
it was beautifully done. Mm-hmm. And Les Weekends, which was kind of light and trivial, but not trivial. That's not fair. I mean, it was also dealing with this issue. So if you want to do your own mini film festival, you can.
I think the clip is them discussing the arrival of this letter from this long-lost girlfriend.
Yeah. What is it?
A letter.
Yes, I know, but from? In German?
Yeah.
What's it say?
Well, I can't remember the verbs as well as the nouns. But I think it says they found her.
Found who?
Well, her body, anyway.
God, who? Jeff?
They found Katya. You know who I'm talking about, don't you?
Of course.
I remember telling you, clear as day.
Of course I remember. I mean, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, and I know I told you about my Katya. She's been there over 50 years. Like something in the freezer. Now they've found her.
My Katya.
The letter is not from Katya, obviously. It's about that they have found her.
Mm-hmm. So that film is 45 Years, starring Charlotte Rampling. Highly recommended from the critics,
Yes.
Good stuff.
Okay, that sounds great. Let's move on to Hail Caesar, Cynthia Haynes, the latest from the Coen brothers. This is a comedy about the latter days of Hollywood's golden era and a kidnapped movie star who I think is a guy named George Clooney.
really looking for, was looking forward to this film, terribly
Uh-oh.
Disappointed.
Uh-oh.
And I'm not the only one. This is the worst opening, I think, for a Coen film in a very long time.
It's getting hit, yeah.
Yeah, not doing well at all. It's a movie set in the 1950s, and there are movies within a movie here. We've got Josh Brolin, who is a... They used to call them fixers. There was a real guy named Eddie Mannix. When someone became pregnant, they would deal with that. When someone hit somebody with a car and you know, was going to jail, he dealt with that. He had a lot of the policemen, you know, he was paying them off during this era, which was very different from today. I mean, what was happening back then. So you've got Brolin is sort of over, character Mannix is overseeing Capitol Pictures, and it would have been MGM back in the day. And we've got George Clooney is the clueless A-lister who's been kidnapped. He's got to deal with that. Scarlett Johansson is an aquatic movie starlet, a la Esther Williams, who's expecting a child, Channing Tatum, a song and dance man. There's a wonderful but strange musical number right in the middle of this movie. And I thought, give me more of that than what we see up on the screen. And Channing Tatum is a good dancer, I tell you. Ray Fiennes plays a British director with a short fuse. Alden Ehrenreich plays a young cowboy star. For me, he's the actor who stole the show.
He is
fantastic.
I agree 100%.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he's a cowboy star, like a Tex Ritter, who's brought in to play like this Noel Coward-esque film. And he talks like that.
Yeah.
And Ray Fiennes is this effete director who's trying to get him to say the line, and I wrote it down, "Were that it was not so." And for 5 minutes, he tries to get him to say it correctly. I was, the old cliche, rolling in the aisles. I thought it was hysterical.
But what charmed me is when he's taking a starlet out to dinner on an arranged date, and he amuses her by tying the spaghetti into a lariat and doing rope trips with spaghetti.
He's so adorable. Yeah.
He is quite
this
something.
This sounds like we enjoyed this a lot more than we did. The problem is that aside from these isolated moments, the movie doesn't really go anywhere. The Eddie Mannix character seems to be agonizing over something that we really never understand. And
he's going to confession.
Well,
and I guess that's just because he knows that if you work in Hollywood, you better go to confession every day. And the film is very ambivalent about religion and the Red Scare that was going on at that time. Mm-hmm. It tries to make fun of both, but it never quite does.
And the scene with the group of people who connected with the Red Scare who kidnapped Clooney go on forever. It's a lot of talking.
And could care less, yeah.
And it's just, it doesn't go anywhere.
On the
other hand,
there's a wonderful scene where Eddie Mannix convenes a bunch of faith leaders to read the script for a biblical epic, and they get into
a gripe match that is
just a hysterical send-up of organized religion.
Just quickly, the cinematographer on this film was Roger Deakins, and he shot it on film.
Oh, did he really?
This is a new trend. Tarantino's Hateful Eight was shot on 70mm film. Carol was shot on 16mm film. Bridge of Spies, 35mm film. And so they're having trouble finding film equipment for film stock and processing and whatever. But anyway.
We have a clip here from Hail Caesar.
Yeah. It's Tilda Swinton. She plays two characters, which would have been probably Hedda Hopper and Luella Parsons back in the 50s. But she plays one of this gossip columnists, and she's confronting Eddie Mannix.
Okay.
I'm notifying you as a courtesy before I run tomorrow's story.
Desley. Yeah, I just saw your... Oh, never mind. How you doing? What's the story?
It's about Bette Whitlock. But
there's absolutely no truth to that old story, believe me.
Old?
Old, stale, rotten.
I'm talking about today.
What?
Little Bird told me that he disappeared from the set today.
Oh, that. No. Yes, he did have to take a break. Minor injury, high ankle sprain.
What did you think I meant?
No, nothing. I saw your sister earlier. She was trying to resurrect some old gossip about Bear.
Oh, I'm sure she was, that cow. She wouldn't know a new story if it bit her on the posterior.
Yeah, well, she...
High ankle sprain? Is that really the best you could come up with? We all know about the womanizing and the drinking jags and the trips to San Badu.
Baird is a good family man. He has a high ankle sprain.
Mr. Mannix?
What's up, Peanut?
Natalie told me to find you PDQ. I know it sounds screwy, but she said someone's calling from the future.
Good Lord. Desley, I have to run.
That's from Hail Caesar, and you all are saying this is a rare miss from the Coen brothers.
I liked it, and I think we are all in agreement fervently about this Alden Ehrenreich's performance, who holds his own and is the best thing in the film among Clooney, Johansson, Brolin. So going to see him and watch his performance is going to be enjoyable.
Film, a lot of film for a little bit of...
And Channing Tatum dancing.
The Channing Tatum sandwich actually, at the close of that scene was quite entertaining.
Perhaps it's best to consider Hail Caesar as a series of short films about Hollywood.
Yeah.
Okay, sort of mixed reviews for Hail Caesar here. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking with our film critics about the latest art, independent, and foreign films now showing. Kathy Sudeikis joins us now, the mother of Jason Sudeikis. And Kathy, so good to have you. Good morning.
Thanks. Very nice to be with you. I loved hearing about these documentary shorts.
Yes. And you want to talk about one of them.
Well, I'm biased, but I think it is pretty fantastic. Olivia executive produced the film Body Team 12.
That's your daughter-in-law, right?
Daughter-in-law, right. Mm-hmm. And she is, it showed at Tribeca, and I saw it then. And interestingly enough, it was in the same block with The Gnomist, which is the Overland Park-based film.
I heard Olivia talking.
Both might get it.
Olivia was talking about it last night on Andy Cohen's talk show, Watch What Happens Live.
It's terrific because the fella who actually was the DP and shooting it was a volunteer himself. So they had incredible access to be right at the homes of people who they were taking the bodies from. And it's such a moving story because in the left-hand corner, the body count and the spread of Ebola runs alongside, and it starts at like 400, and it pretty soon it's 20,000 and all of that kind of thing. And they go to get these bodies and wrap up completely and have to convince the body to give them to the family to give the body to this team so they can dispose of it rather than handle it in the typical way that they would handle it in their community. It's very powerful, and it's very quick. I think it's 13 minutes.
That sounds good. Well, Kathy, thanks so much for recommending it to us. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Bye-bye. Again, she's talking about Body Team 12. That's one of the Oscar-nominated short documentary films now showing. Okay, Bob Butler, Anomalisa. This is the existential romantic drama using stop-motion animation about an unhappy motivational speaker who's the author of How May I Help You Help Them?
Sounds like it shouldn't work, but it did for me. The man behind this is Charlie Kaufman, who's given us things like Being John Malkovich, and Eternal
adaptation.
Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Adaptation. Charlie is a unhappy fella, but it makes for some pretty interesting movies.
Mm-hmm.
Our hero is a fella named Michael. He's voiced by David Thewlis, and Michael's flying to Cincinnati to do a motivational seminar. You immediately notice that while Michael speaks with his own voice, everybody else, men, women, children, all speak with the voice of character actor Tom Noonan. When you look closely, you realize that aside from Michael, everybody has the same face, different hair, different costumes, but exactly the same features. At the convention, he runs across this shy young woman named Lisa. She's an anomaly, and she becomes to him Anomalisa. He takes all of his anxieties and pours them upon her. She's going to be his deliverance, this innocent young woman. Well, that's easier said than done. You don't meet somebody overnight, have a one-night stand, and suddenly find your life turned inside out. Once you get to know people, they're a little bit different than what you anticipated. The metaphor they use, though, of everybody but he and Lisa having the same voice and face, I thought was incredibly interesting.
Hmm.
Also, and I hesitate, I blush to say this, it has an erotic encounter between these puppets that was better than anything I've seen in a real live-action movie in a long time.
Wow, that's
Bob, that's not true.
Yes, it is.
Gosh.
You all see it, Steve?
Yeah, oh, sure.
Yeah? What'd you think?
I liked it a lot, and in fact, you know, you hear people say, I want to nominate this particular actor for voice work. In Jennifer Jason Leigh's case, I almost nominated her for the KC Film Critics Circle.
She's
an amazing,
very good.
She is Lisa's voice, and you can understand in a sense why he falls for her, because there's so much personality and pain in that
pain.
Voice.
You
now,
feel the pain.
I mean,
her voice.
Have we been clear here? These are clay puppets that are moved using stop motion animation. And I just thought the sex scene was totally...
Totally what?
Inappropriate?
Know. Inappropriate.
Yeah. We have a clip,
I found
Bob.
It amazingly moving. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. We're just going to have to... Oh, this is where I guess he meets
her
Lisa.
In the hotel room.
And her friend, a woman who speaks with a man's voice, since everybody does.
Hi. Oh, my God. It's you.
Hi. I'm sorry to bother you.
No, no, not at all. Do you want to come in? Or?
I was just looking for someone... I think I've got the wrong...
Who's there, Em?
It's Mr. Stone. Michael Stone.
Really? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Hello? Oh, do I look awful? I was just taking my makeup off. Oh, my God. Ugh, don't look at me.
Hello. No, you look lovely.
I can't believe you're in our room. We came here from Akron just to hear you speak. Oh, my God, please don't look at me.
Well, I'm certainly very flattered.
You can look at me.
Emily.
That's from Anomalisa. Great reviews from our critics. Steve Walker, Bob Butler, Cindy Hades. There are three to see. Their recommendations for the best three films showing on area screens will be up on our website later today, kcur.org. Thank you all very
Thank
much.
You.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.